Okay, you know what? We're gonna get started. Why don't we start? We'll start 12 lines up from the bottom. Ace Fe. Is that past where the Rav?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Meaning that's he already covered that?
Yeah.
Okay. All
right.
I think it should start from
Esfay. Okay, that's where we're going to get started. Okay, so what's going on here in the Gemara is so we had basically that Abaya came and he found Rava that he was playing with his son on an animal on a chamor. So he said, "Wait, you're not allowed to use an animal. You're being mishtamash b'balei chayim." So he said, "I'm just using the side of the animal." And the sides of the animal, the Rabbanan weren't gozer, because the whole reason we don't ride on a animal is because there was a gzeir of the Rabbanan, there was a safeguard, because the concern was if people would ride on an animal, they might come to break off a branch to hit the animal or something of that nature. So we say that therefore he said they weren't gozer. In any event, so the Gemara asks, Esve, as follows. I guess it's 12 lines up. Shtayim bidei adam v'achas bi'ilon kshera v'ein olon lo b'yantiv. So this is talking about a sukkah. So we know that a sukkah needs to have three walls. Technically speaking, it's two in a little bit, but there still needs to be three walls. And so in this particular case, someone built two walls regularly. And one was using a tree, and we're going to see exactly what does that mean. They were using a tree as the third wall. So as Rashi points out, even though we know we don't use things that are connected to the ground, for example, for schach, for walls of a sukkah, you could use anything, and a tree is an acceptable thing to use. But the Gemara says, we don't actually, in other words, it's a kosher sukkah, but it's not very helpful because you can't use it on Yom Tov, because the Chazal were misaking, that you should not use it. What's the reason? Because basically the halachas, one of the reasons you don't go up in a tree is also because you might break off something. So we're going to see there's an assumption in the Gemara that there's a parallel between, riding an animal and going up in a tree. But in any event, or using a tree, the reason they said you don't use this sukkah that has two regular walls and one wall that's a tree is because the schach is resting on that wall. And people in the times of the Gemara used to use the schach. That's where they would store their things, between meals or whatever. So since they used the schach, and the schach is resting on the tree, so therefore they felt like this was a case of using a tree, and therefore, even though it's a kasher sukkah by the halachas of sukkah, then nonetheless we said that you wouldn't actually use that sukkah on Yantav. So now we're going to try to figure out what case this is. Because the argument, the question again we're dealing with here is whether tzadin, the sides, had the gzeira. So side is something that's ancillary. It's not the primary use. So we were talking about in the context of playing on the side of a behemoth, but it's true with other things too. So says the Gemara, my lav the chokbe be'ilon, the havilahut tzadin. So the Gemara assumes that the case here was not where the wall itself really constituted, where the tree itself constituted a wall, but rather you made notches in the tree and you stuck boards in, and so the tree was supporting this wall. So it wasn't a standalone wall, it was a tree that was had parts added to it. And yet we say that it's considered using the tree, and that's why Chazal and Misakin, that you shouldn't use it, you don't use that sukkah on Yom Tov. So when we're talking about these boards that are put in a tree, that's tzedadin. Those are the sides of a tree. It's not the tree itself. Utzadin asurin. And so you see that tzedadin, that sides of a tree, meaning the non-primary part, is usur. So this is a question on Rabbah, who was saying that you could use the sides of the non-primary part of an animal, that the gezerah didn't reach to there. So the Gemara says, no, that is no proof, because even though there it says you don't use the sukkah, it's not because you were using the tzedadin, which would be these boards that are supported by a tree, but rather lo de kafila ilon, va'anach sichu chalave, de kamashamish bi'ilon. So the Gemara says, no, we're not talking about where you used boards, we're talking about where you used the actual tree. And the way Rashi explains it is, you had two trees there, and you bent down the branches of the two trees, you tied them together, and that created essentially a wall of the sukkah. So the difference is that now it's not tzedadin, it's the actual tree. And everyone agrees that using an actual tree is a problem. So there's no proof, the answer is there's no proof from this Mishnah there's no proof that this is talking about tzedadin at all, about the non-primary use, because here you are using the tree directly, so it's a primary use. So the Gemara says, well, wait a second, ihachi ema seifa. So then, if you're telling me that that's the case, so then let's look at the continuation of that case with the sukkah. Shalosh bidei adam va'achas bi'ilon k'sheira va'olno b'yantiv. So if we talked about if you had two walls that were regular and one that was a tree, so we said it's a kosher sukkah, but you don't use it. We say, what if three walls were done were regular constructed walls and one was the tree? And then it says, then it's kosher, obviously, because it's three walls, even better than, it has four walls altogether, even better than three. And not only that, you can use it on Yom Tov. So now the Gemara says, but if you're telling me that when the fourth wall is actually bending over the trees and you're using the trees directly, amayal and lo b'Yom Tov. So then why, even when it has a fourth wall, why does that change the halacha? At the end of the day, you still have a wall that's made from trees, direct bearing, but the trees have the schach on top of them. So you shouldn't be able to use it. So in other words, how could you explain, in other words, the way to get out of the issue of trying to say that this speaks to the issue of tzedadin was saying, no, it's not tzedadin, it's a direct tree. So ask the Gemara, but wait a second, the seifa, when you add a third regular wall, and therefore four walls with the tree, why should it be any different? So the Gemara says, Velamai, so what, you're going to tell me it's better the way you're learning it, tzedadin asur, and that tzedadin are asur? So then how do you explain the seifa? Sofa, my olin lo b'yantif. So even according to you, we're going to say back, this is Rava is defending this case, or those who are explaining Rava are defending the case, they're saying, it's no better according to you, Abaya. At the end of the day, you say, not only is a regular tree asur, but even tzedadin are asur. So if at the end of the day, you're using tzedadin, so therefore, you should not be able to you should not be able to go in this sukkah, even if it has three regular walls and a fourth wall that's a tree. At the end of the day, you're still using a tree. So elohasam, so it must be that we're not dealing with a case of using a tree, not tzedadin and not regular. So what's the case that we say that the fourth wall is okay? Begavaza parsachna. The Ilon Gufa Dofen Ba'almahu Deshaveh. So he says as follows, we're talking about the fact that we're not dealing with where he bent over the trees, and we're not even dealing with a case where he notched it out and put boards, which would be tzedadin, but rather all we're talking about is a screen of foliage that's there, and it's not really a primary wall at all. So he's saying that the Elon itself is just a regular wall, Dofen Ba'alma. It's not supporting the sukkah. And therefore, the idea is that if you have three walls that are built regular, and the fourth wall isn't necessary and isn't bearing weight of the sukkah, of the schach, so then you can use it even though it's there. So it says the Gemara, Dekanami, Diktani. This also makes sense because we finished that memra of the sukkah by saying, Zaklal, this is the rule, Ko, that in any case where if you would take away the tree, it would still be able to stand, that you're allowed to use on yantiv. So in fact, we learn from there that that's the case. So therefore, what we're saying is, if the wall is not a necessary wall, it's just there as like a foliage screen, so that doesn't, the fact that a tree is being used as a fourth wall, if it's not a wall that's holding any weight and it's not holding up the schach, that's not a problem. So therefore, we're leaving off that this whole thing about sukkah is not dispositive on the question of tzedadin, because maybe it's not talking about tzedadin, it's not talking about boards that were notched in, but rather it's talking about the actual tree. And everyone agrees that if you're using an actual tree, then the chazal were going to be misakin. So this has nothing to do with tzedadin. And the fourth case, the seifa, which talks about the fourth wall being a tree, that you're allowed to use because the schach isn't really resting on the tree. Okay, Continues the Gemara, Lema Katanai. Maybe this issue of whether tzedadin, the non-primary use of something that's usher, counts, maybe that's a machlokas tanayim. Why? Because we learned as follows in a brisa, ein olin lo b'yantiv. This is talking about this same sukkah. You don't go up on yantiv. Rav Shimon ben Elazar, Amar, Mishum, Rav Meir, olin lo b'yantiv. That you do go up on it on yantiv. So now, we have to figure out, this cannot be talking about where it's the primary tree being used, presumably. Why? Because everyone in the last discussion we just had, everyone agreed that if it's a primary use of the tree, you can't use it. And yet here we see that they're saying in the name of a mayor, you can go up. So it can't be talking about where you're using the primary tree. So maybe this must be talking about a case at Sadadin where you had boards notched in and you're using the sides of the boards. You're using the non-primary part of the tree. It's supported by the tree, but you're using the boards. So can't we say that this is what they're arguing about? The Marsava, Tzedadin Asurim, or Marsava Mutarin, that one holds that, the sides, meaning these boards that are notched in, which are non-primary use, are usur, and therefore you cannot, it's usur to use it, and therefore the sukkah is relying on it, and therefore you can't go up, you can't use that sukkah as a sukkah. And one holds that tzedadin is not a problem, and therefore even though you're using these boards in an ancillary use, chazal were not mesakin, and even though the schach is resting on it, you should still be able to use it. So says the Gemara, Amar Abaya, so Abaya, who continues to try and say that everyone agrees that tzedadin are usur, says, lo, the kuda, because Abaya is the one who said to Rabba that you're not allowed to use tzedadin. So Abaya says, lo, that you can't even tell me it's machlokas tanayim. The kuliyam but tzedadin asurim, because everyone holds that ancillary uses, non-primary uses are also asur. Vahacha, so what is the machlokas here between the Tanakama and Rav Shimon ben Elazar in the name of Rav Meir? Hacha but tzidei tzedadin kamifugi, because they're arguing about tzidei tzedadin, which are the sides of the sides. Mar saver tzidei tzedadin asurin, mar saver tzidei tzedadin mutarin. So Abaya is going to say everyone agrees that tzedadin, non-primary uses that are ancillary, are asur. What is it that they were arguing about in this machlokas tanayim? Is when you have a double ancillary use, meaning. So what's the double ancillary use? So he's saying, what would happen, he says, the case Abaya would say they're arguing about is the following. If you had a tree, you notched holes into it, and you put in boards. So now those boards become a side. Those are an ancillary use, not a primary use. And then you have the schach hanging off of that, or not hanging off, but resting on that. So the schach becomes tzidei tzedadin. And the whole reason that we said that Chazal said you shouldn't use the sukkah on Yamtif is because since you use the schach, it's like you're using the tree. So now we're saying, wait, it's a double removal. Because first of all, you're only using the boards, not the tree itself. And then you're only using the schach that's resting on the boards. So one opinion would say that's sufficiently removed from the use of a tree because it's double sides. It's double ancillary, and therefore you can use it. And the other is going to say, no, at the end of the day, you're using a tree. So Abaya says, only in that case do the Tanayim argue. But otherwise, I'm still stand by my view, says Abaya, that everyone agrees that stud and that sides are usur. Okay? So Rava Amar, so Rava disagrees with Abaya, and again, it was Rava who we spoke about before, but Rava is saying like Rava, that it says, no, manda usur bit studin, usur nami bit tzidet studin, manda shari bit tzidet studin, shari nami bit studin. He says, no, there's no difference between, side or like ancillary or double ancillary. It's one or the other. Either you think that, that ancillary uses are a problem, or you think that they're acceptable, but one or two doesn't make any difference. So that's what Rava's language is. Is that whoever says that using ancillary uses are usur would say even when it's a double ancillary, it's usur. And the one who says that you can use double uses would also allow you to use a single use. So therefore, he's not exactly saying, in other words, he would say that there's no proof like Abaya is saying that everyone agrees that tzedadin are usur. Because he would say, the one who said tzidei tzedadin are mutar would also say tzedadin are mutar, and therefore that would be an opening for finding a Tana who held like Rava. Okay, ask the Gemara, Eisvei Reb Mesharshia LaRava. So now Rava says, there's no one who distinguishes between a single ancillary use and a double ancillary use. So the Gemara is now going to ask, Reb Mesharshia asks as follows to Rava. Says the Braisa, Na'atz yasad ba'ilon. That if someone stuck a, normally we say yasad is like a spit, like a nail. Rashi says for some reason the nagar, which is like the bolt of a door. But whatever the point is, it was some kind of appendage he stuck into a tree. V'tala ba'kalkala, and he hung a basket. Now why did he hang a basket here? Because we know the halacha is as follows, that on Shabbos, you cannot go past your tchum. Your tchum is where you live, the city you're in, or the, if you're not in the city, where your own space. And from there, you have 2,000 amos in each direction. What happens if I want to go 4,000 amos to my west? So what I could do is, even though I'm starting Shabbos where I am, if I put food at the 2,000 amos to my west, that essentially, where that food is, because I could go there and eat it, that establishes where my place is for starting Shabbos, and therefore I have 2,000 amos in either direction from there. So since I'm starting 2,000 amos of the way toward my 4,000 amos destination, I can go all the way 4,000 amos to the west. I will have 0 feet to the east, because my place is not where I am at the start of Shabbos, it's where my food was at the start of Shabbos. And east is going to take you to my place and no further. But in any event, so someone wanted to shift his shvisa. He wanted to shift where his domicile is for purposes of calculating the tchum of Shabbos. So he put his food 2,000 amos to the west, and that's where he was trying to establish his shvisa. So it says he stuck this this nail in the tree. And he hung his basket that had his food, because that's how you set your shvisa, is by putting your food there. But what happened? So if he did it, l'mala me'asar tfachim, if the nail and the basket are above 10 tfachim, ein eruv o eruv. So his eruv is not a good eruv. L'mata miyut tfachim, but if it's within 10 tfachim of the ground, eruv o eruv, then his eruv is a good eruv. So what is this? What's the point of this? Because he's traveling. He's on Rosh Hashanah. So the problem is, if his basket, and Rashi points out the baskets in those days typically were at least 4 amos wide. So if he has a basket that is 4 amos space and it's above 10 tefachim, so that makes it into Rosh Hashanah. So now it's a problem, because his food that he was relying on to establish where his shvisa would be for Shabbos is in Rosh Hashanah. But where he's going, that he should be able to say, this is where I'm living, is Rosh Hashanah. And the problem is, he can't carry the food from his basket to where he's sitting. So therefore, it's an invalid Eruv, and he cannot use this Eruv. Okay, so we say, if it's above 10 tefachim, his food is in Rosh Hashanah, he's in Rosh Hashanah, and the Eruv doesn't work. If it's less than 10 tefachim, then he and his Eruv are in the same place, and it's a valid Eruv. So now, the Gemara is picking up on the fact, why did I have to say that he hung it on a nail? Why not just say he hung it on a tree? So the Gemara says, "Taima de na'etz yasad be'ilan." It seems that that we're being told the only reason its eruv works is because he hung it on a nail that was in the tree. Halo na'etz. But if he wouldn't have put a nail in the tree first, afilu matam yutvachem enei ruvo eruv. So then it would seem to say the implication is that if he didn't have a nail, it would not be an eruv, even if it was within 10 tefachim. What would be the rationale for that? Would be that because he is using the tree by hanging the basket on it, so then it's, he's not allowed to use the tree, and therefore they're going to say that's not a good Eruv. So then how does it help if he stuck a nail? Because then you're going to say he's a step removed. It's not just that he's using the protuberance of a tree, but rather it's not just the side of a tree that he's using, but it's the side of a tree with a nail stuck in. So now it would seem that this is a case of tzidet staden. It's a double ancillary use. It's not a primary use. So now you're seeing that what? If he has a nail, then it's acceptable. If he doesn't have a nail, then even though it's tzedadin, this is not the primary use of a tree, nonetheless, we're going to say it's asr. So you see here that you have a Tana. Rava was the one who said, whoever says one ancillary is good even if it's a double ancillary, and if it's vice versa. And if you think that single ancillary is no good, then double ancillary is no good either. But here you have a brisa that's requiring a nail. And so it seems to be that it's distinguishing between tzedadin and tzidet tzedadin. So the Gemara says no. So one second. So this is still part of the question. Well, hi Tana. This Tana, the Ka'asar Bitzdadin, he's saying it's usher to use a tree, even though that's Dadin, because Shari Bitzidet Dadin, but he's allowing a double removal where you have this, the non-primary use of a tree plus a spit, a nail, is enough to make it mutter. So you see someone does distinguish between Tzadadin and Tzidet Tzadin. So the Gemara says, Amar Papa, no, this is not a question of Tzadadin and Tzidet Tzadin. Hacha bekalkala dechuka askinon. We're talking about a basket that's tight. Rashi explains that you have to stick your hand in, and it's a tight thing. It's not like you could just put your hand and pull something out easily. You have to like squeeze your hand in. Therefore, the bahadi the shakul leile eruv kamanid leile ilon the kamashamish be ilon gufe. So he says, here's the reason why you need a nail is because since it's a thin opening to the basket, that when you're taking out your eruv, you're taking out your food, you're going to end up shaking the tree. If you're hanging your food in a way that there's no way to access your food without shaking the tree, that's an indicator that you're using the tree. And using the tree, the Rabbanim weren't going to let you do. But if you put a nail, so then when you reach in to get the food from your basket, even though it's a tight fit, at the end of the day, your basket's on a nail. The nail isn't moving, and the tree isn't moving. The tree's not shaking, so therefore you're not using the tree. So the Gemara is answering, this was not a case. The reason for the nail was not to create two levels of ancillariness, of two levels of abstraction to say that that's mutter, but if it didn't have the nail, it's tzedadin and would be asar, but rather the issue is a totally different issue. It has to do with, are you going to move the tree when you take the food out? If you inevitably are going to move the tree when you take the food out, it means you're using the tree and that would be usher. But if you're hanging it on a nail such that neither the nail nor the tree moves when you reach for your food, so then it's not a problem and, you'll be able to use that Erev will be a valid Erev. So the question is answered. Okay, says the Gemara, V'hilchos of halachas tzedadin asurin, tzidet tzedadin mutarin. So at the end of the day, though, the halacha, unlike what Rava said, where they travel one with the other, meaning that they're the same halacha applies to both, here the Gemara is saying, if it's tzedadin, if it's a single level of abstraction, it's an ancillary use, it's still usher, but if it's a double level of abstraction, where it's an ancillary use of an ancillary use, so then it's going to be mutar. Amar Ravashi. Ravashi says, Hashada amrit tzedadin asurin. Now that we said that using something in an ancillary way is aser. Hai darga de madla lo linchi inish adikla de havalut studin. Let me explain the case and then we'll read it. So what it's describing is as follows. Rashi talks about a sukkas notzrim, which is a hut that was used for a watch guards. So they used to have a watchtower that was high, so that they could see people coming or whatever it was. So how did people get into that watchtower? So it seems they would build it next to tall trees, to a dekel, to palm trees, and people would go up a ladder that was resting on the palm tree, and then they would move into the guard hut up there on the top. So what the Gemara is saying is as follows. Now that you've said that Sedadin is Asur and Tzidet Tzadin are Mutter, so here's the issue. So now let's read inside. Hashadam Tzadin Asurin, High Dagger the Midla, when you're dealing with this kind of high watchtower, Lo Lenchi Inish Adikla, that a person should not lean his ladder on the tree itself, on the palm tree itself. Why? The Havilahut Tzadin, because that's an ancillary use of a tree, and an ancillary use of a tree is usher. So you cannot rest the ladder that you want to use to climb up to this guard booth on the tree, because that would be using a ancillary use of a tree, and that's usher. Ella, rather, what should you do? Lenche agavazi levar midiklo. Rather, what you should do is you have a board or a nail or something coming out of the palm tree, and you put the ladder against that. So now the ladder is resting on something that is extending from an ancillary use. So using the tree altogether is an ancillary use, by putting this extra peg or whatever, something sticking out that you can rest the ladder on, that's a double ancillary use. So he's saying double ancillary uses are okay. So just make sure when you use the ladder that the ladder is resting against something that's sticking out of the tree, not at the tree itself, because resting on the tree itself would be tzedadin. And continues Urvashi, and it says, v'chisalek, and when, okay, so that tells you where to put the ladder. But not only that, when you're going up the ladder, lo linach karia gavazi ela lisnach akonin. So he says as follows, that once you're, so he says that when you're going up, you should make sure not to go put your foot directly on this thing, but rather you should use either the shlivos hasulam, Rashi says, the rungs of the ladder, or the branches that stick out from the guard booth thing itself. But you shouldn't use you should not go straight onto the thing. I'm sorry, let me just see Rashi here. Yeah, so he's saying that you should make sure that when you're doing this, that you don't rest yourself on the tree directly, but rather you should use either the rung, in other words, be careful where you put your feet so that you're not using the tzadim of the tree, and you should make sure that you're only using the tzidei tzadim. So you would use the rungs of the ladder or some rungs that might have been sticking out from the pole that's holding up the overall watch booth. Okay, says the Mishnah, Matirin pikiye amir lifnei behema umefasfasin esakipon avalo esaziron. Okay, so I'll explain sort of what this is talking about, but we're gonna have to read the Gemara, because the Gemara has two very different explanations possible here. So the idea would be as follows: that there are bundles of straw. You have three things going on here. You have two kinds of bundles of straw, and you have also, we're going to see, bundles of like some kind of branches. But the idea would be that matirin pekiye omir, that the pekiyin, which is one kind of bundle, that you can untie it on Shabbos, lefnei behemah, before behemah. So basically you can untie this bundle so that the animal can eat. Umefasfasin es akipin, and we spread the kipin, which means whatever keep-in is, we'll figure out in a minute, that you can actually spread, not just untie, but spread. Avalos hazirin, but not zirin, which we're going to see what that is also. All right, so let's just leave that for the minute. It'll make more sense when we get to the Gemara. Continues the Mishnah. Eim rasikin, los ha-shachas, los ha-charuvin, that we don't, risuk is like to dice up something or to cut it very finely. So we don't dice up shachas. Shachas is like the junky... The leftovers, like the stubble from straw or something like that, or charuvin are caribs, like a boxer. So it says you don't chop that up well in front of an animal, lefnei behema, in front of an animal, ben daka ben gasa, regardless of whether it's a behema daka or behema gasa, whether it's a cow or a bull or something like that, or it's a behema daka like a sheep or a goat. So again, we'll see in a minute what this is talking about. Rabbi Yehuda matir b'charuva ledaka. Rabbi Yehuda says, for a carib, you could dice it up well, for a small animal like a goat or a sheep. So right now this Mishnah doesn't make a lot of sense, but let's do the Gemara and then we'll understand what's going on. Amar Rav Huna, hein pekiyin. Okay, so just pay attention. At the beginning of our Mishnah, we had pekiyin, we had kifin, and we had zirin. Okay, so Rav Huna's opinion is hein pekiyin, hein kipin. That pekiyin and kipin are the same thing. Pekiyin is this straw stuff, that tray that has two ropes tied around it, and kipin tlasa. That a kipin is something that had three ropes tied around it, but otherwise they're the same. It's just tied a little bit differently. Let's just see the girsa here. Okay, and then we say zradin da arze. So he says, and zradin or zirin is talking about branches of a cedar tree. Okay, so now let's just talk about what are we talking about with these branches. Basically, when you would prune the cedar tree, you'd get these branches. When the branches were still young and moist, they could theoretically be used for animals to feed them to the animals. So okay, so therefore he's saying pekiyin and kipin are the same. Just one is two knots and one is three knots. And zirin is talking about branches of a cedar tree. V'hachi kamar, and this is what the Mishnah is saying. We're going to look back in the Mishnah to see how it reads in the Mishnah. But let's just read the Gemara. Matirin pekiyin amir lifnei behema, that you can open pekiye. The pekiyin, which is the two rope bundle of straw before behema, umafasfasin, and you can spread it out. Vuhu adin lekipin, and that's the same halacha for kipin, because according to Rav Huna, pekiyin and kipin are the same thing. Kipin is just the three ropes, so he says same thing. You can untie it and you could spread it out. Avalos azirin, but zirin, which is these cedar branches, lo lefasfes, lo lahatir. You can not only not spread them out, you can't even open them. So now let's read the Mishnah the way Rav Huna reads the Mishnah. So let's just go back to the Mishnah. Matirin peki omir, that you can open two roped tied bundles of straw, lefnei behema before behema, umefasvasin et akipin, and you can spread out kipin. Kipin is three ropes, and since kipin and pekiin are the same thing, so it's saying you can both open them, and you can open both of them, or you could spread out both of them. Avalos azirin, but not cedar branches, because cedar branches you cannot use either. You cannot use you cannot untie them, and you can't spread them out. Okay, so that's how Rav Huna reads the Mishnah. So Am Rav Chista, my time with Rav Huna. Why does Rav Huna say this halacha this way? Kasavar, he holds lemitrach ba'uchlo tarchinon leshavui oichlan lo mishavinon. So he says, To mess around with food to make it better, that we're allowed to do, but to turn something into food, that we don't do. So how does that apply to the Mishnah? So he's saying as follows, that when you have bundles of straw, that was and is animal food. Now, if you stick the bundles there, the animals don't eat out of a bundle. They need to be unbundled. So therefore, you have food. It was food beforehand. And all you're doing is you're untying it. Now, why? So first of all, you can untie it because you're just fixing the food that already was food. And why can you spread it out? Rashi explains, because if it's not spread out, somehow warms itself a little bit, Rashi says, and then therefore its reyach, its smell doesn't smell as good, and therefore the katza behind the animals aren't going to want to eat it. So whatever the point is, you have a bundle of this straw, and if you don't untie it and spread it out, it's not going to work for the animals. So therefore you're allowed to do it. What are you not allowed to do? You're not allowed to untie or spread these cedar branches. Why? Because those aren't really food to begin with. Generally speaking, people use that for firewood. So when he unbundles it and spreads it out in front of the behemoths, he's turning it into food. And you cannot turn something into food according to Rav Huna. So that's how Rav Huna reads our Mishnah. Rav Yehuda reads our Mishnah differently. He says, remember again, we had pekiyin, kipin, and zirin. Now, Rav Huna said that pekiyin and kipin were the same thing, and zirin was the cedar. Rav Yehuda says, no. Hein hein pekiyin, hein hein zirin. That pekiyin and zirin are the same. Pekiyin tray, the pekiyin are ones that have two ropes. Zirin tilsa have three ropes. So those two are the same thing and have the same halachas. Keepin, the arzi is talking about cedar branches. V'hachi kamar, and this is what it's saying. Matirin pekiye amr lefnei behema, that you can untie pekiyin of a wheat before behema. Avo paspuse lo, but you cannot spread it out. The kifin and kifin, which we said is talking about the branches of the cedar branches, he says, papuse nami misfasinon. That he says that the cedar branches we can actually untie and even spread them out. Avalo hazirin, but not the zirin lefasfes to spread them out. El lahatir, only to release them. Okay, so even though the Gemara just did this, I'll go back and read the Mishnah again the way Rav Yehuda would understand the Mishnah. And Rav Yehuda's reading of the Mishnah is a little bit funny because you'll see it jumps back and forth, but it goes as follows. Matirin pikiyam lefnei behema, that we can untie pikiyin, which is these branches of these bundles of straw that have two ropes. So that's all we could do. We can untie bundles of wheat. We cannot spread them out. Umefasvesin is a kipin, but when we're talking about kipin, which is these the cedar branches, then you can spread them out. And if you could spread them out, obviously you can open them. And then it goes back. Avaloas azirin, but zirin you can't spread out. So cedar you can, but zirin you can't. What are zirin? Zirin, you were saying, are the same as the thing at the beginning of the Mishnah, the pekiyin. It's a bundle of wheat, of straw, but it just has three ropes instead of two. So therefore, what's it coming out? That according to Rav Huna, the Mishnah was saying, food that exists, like bundles of straw, that you can untie and spread out. But things that were not food before, like cedar branches, you can't do anything with. You can't untie, you can't spread it out. Rav Yehuda is saying in a certain sense, the exact opposite. He's saying cedar branches you can untie and you can spread them out. The bundles of straw you can untie them, but you can't spread them out. Why? So I'm a Rava. My time with Rav Yehuda. Rav says, why? What's Rav Yehuda's rationale here? Kasavar shavuye oichlin meshavinon mitrach baoichlin lo tachinon. That the Chazal let you turn something into food because if you don't do this, it's not going to be food, and then your animal is not going to have what to eat. But to just mess around to make something better or easier for the animal is not acceptable. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda's of the opinion, when it comes to a bundle of straw, you can untie it. Because if you don't untie it, then your animal can't eat it. But you can't spread it out. Why? Because that's just improving the food. And at the end of the day, so fine, the smell won't be as strong and the animal won't want it as much, but at the end of the day, the animal can eat it that way. So therefore, you're able to untie. Now, what about when it comes to cedar branches? So that Rav Yehuda says that you can untie and spread out, because if you don't spread it out, the reality is the animals will not eat it. You have to spread it out. So therefore, Rav Yehuda is the one who says you can make something into food, you can't just take the effort to improve food. If it's already existing as food, you can't improve it, but you can make it into food. Therefore, you can untie everything, and you can even spread out cedar branches. And Rav Huna is saying the exact opposite. He's saying you cannot make new food on Shabbos. Therefore, you cannot untie bundles of cedar wood at all. But to fix food, that you could do. So a bundle of straw, you could untie it, you could spread it out because it was food to start with, it's food to end with, and you're just improving it. Now, by the way, this actually has a very interesting application, many applications that affect, and we sort of, I don't know if the Rav touched on it when we spoke about it, when we did some of the previous Gemaras, but there's a big machlokas in the postgame about whether you can have such a thing as makav patish by food, which is there an isser to do the last step that makes food usable or edible? So the case that the Gemara deals with a lot is this Spanish mackerel, where it's a very salty fish, and if you don't pour water on it, it's a problem. Now, we've talked about that with Bishel, but the reality is you could even use cold water to do that. So the question is, if I pour cold water on this salty fish and that renders it edible, did I do makav patish of food? Now, one of the things that people point to is our Gemara, because the Gemara is saying that you could have according to Rabbi Yehuda, you could open a bundle of cedar branches and spread them out, which makes them into food. Before that, they were firewood, and now they're food. So therefore, what do you see? The Gemara doesn't say, well, wait a second, that's makav patish. You're creating something to make it edible. Why is that not a problem, makav patish? Must be that there's no makav patish by food. So this is a major machlokas in the poskim, but I'll give you one example which is relevant, halacha lemaisa, which is when you have a soda stream machine. Like, can you turn water into seltzer? That's like one of the questions they deal with, because at a certain level, you're creating a new type of drink. It was water, plain water, and now you're making seltzer. Now there are other people have other issues with like a SodaStream machine, but this is one of the places where you see contemporary poskim deal with this question of whether there's makav patish by food, and you see from Rabbi Yehuda that you could turn these branches of cedar things into food. Seems to be that there's no problem with makav patish by ochlin. Big machlokas in the contemporary and a little bit before contemporary poskim. So interesting sugya. In any event, so this is very different understandings of Rabbi Yehuda and Rav Huna, and they're exactly the opposite. One says you can create food and not improve food, and the other says you can improve food and not create food. Okay, says the Gemara, second wide line. Tanan, look at our Mishnah. It says, "A merasakin as a shachas as a charuvin," that we can't dice up the shachas, this junky straw, or the carobs, lifne behema, Ben dako ben gasa, whether it's a behemoth dako or behemoth gasa, big animal or small animal. So says the Gemara, my love charuvin dumya de shachas. So it makes sense that the type of carobs we're talking about are similar to the straw we're talking about. Ma shachas de rakiche, just like straw is soft, af charuvin de rakiche. So it must be that we're talking about soft carobs. So alma lo tarchinan v'uchle, because it says, the Tanakhama says, you cannot dice up charuvin, carobs, for any kind of behemoth, whether big or small. So what would that be when you dice it up? If it's a hard carob, so you might say, that's not food. So I have to make it into food. But if you understand that it's like shachas and it's soft, so when you dice it up, what are you doing? You're just improving the food. You're not creating it into food. It was edible beforehand because it was soft. And now you're just making it more pleasant. So it should be that that's mutter. So this is a kasha on Rav Huna, because Rav Huna is the one who says you can make something into food, but you can't improve food. So wait a second. Why? Rav Huna says you can improve food, but you can't make something into food. So if we're talking about soft carobs, it says here you should be able to chop it up because you're just improving it, but yet it says you can't do it. So that seems to be telling you that you cannot improve food, maybe you can only make food. So the Gemara says, Utiyofta de Rav Huna, it's a kasha on Rav Huna. So the Gemara says, Amalek Rav Huna, Rav Huna would answer you, lo, you're assuming that we're talking about soft carobs. Why? Because you said the carobs are like the straw. Just like straw is soft, so the carobs are soft. So if you assume that we're talking about soft carobs, you're right, because then it's saying you can't dice up edible food and make it more edible. But he says, really, it's the opposite. You were learning carobs from shachas. He says it's the opposite. It's shachas dumya de charuvin. Charuvin are, you know, for anyone who's ever tried it on Tu B'Shvat, carobs are hardly edible. So he's saying that the shachas is just like the straw, is just like the carobs. They're very hard. Ma charuvin da kushe, af shachas da kushe. So just like we're talking about hard carobs, we're also talking about hard straw. So now ask the Gemara, heki mishkachas lo, where do you ever have hard straw? So the Gemara says, Beile zutre, we're talking about where you have to make the straw softer because you're feeding it to young ayarim, to young foals or donkeys, right? So the idea is, so Rav Huna is going to answer you, you had a problem with my view because you're saying the Mishnah is telling you can't cut up already edible soft carobs. I'm telling you that actually what the Mishnah is telling you is you cannot cut up you cannot cut up hard carobs, right? Because Rav Huna is the one who says that you cannot make something into food. So Rav Huna is saying if you have hard carobs, you cannot cut it up because, whether for a big animal or small animal, because you're taking a hard carob that's inedible by and large, and you're making it edible by dicing it up. And similarly with straw, if you're talking about straw that you need to make for a very small animal, straw that you need to make for young animals, it needs to be diced up in order to be edible. They can't eat it when it's in its current form, so therefore it's hard for all intents and purposes like a carob. And that's why, explains Rav Huna, the Mishnah says, you can't do it because it would be making something that's currently hard and inedible for its intended purposes, and you're making it edible, that's a problem. So Rav Huna says, I don't have any problem with my Mishnah because if we understand that we're talking about something hard, it fits my view very well. So Tashma. So the Gemara says, let me ask a further question, Rav Huna. Rav Huda, the Mishnah continued and said, Rav Yehuda matir b'charuvin. B'charuvin ladaka. Rav Yehuda says, look, if you're giving the carob to a small animal like a sheep or a goat, you're allowed to dice it up. Why? Because the small animal, its teeth aren't as strong and it can't eat something hard. So he's saying you can cut up a hard carob for a daka. Ladaka in for a small animal, yes. Lagasa lo. But for a large animal, not. So now says the Gemara. E amit bishloma, if you're gonna tell me Tanakama Sabra Mitrach Baochli lo tarchinon, Shave Mishvinan. So if you're gonna tell me, like Reb Yehuda, who's of the opinion that we can, like Reb Yehuda, that you cannot improve food, but you can make something into food, so then that works well. Hainu dekamar Reb Yehuda, hacharuven ladaka nami shavi ochlohu. So he says, so then the flow of the brisa makes sense, because what happened? The Tanakhama says, you cannot improve food, you can only make food. To which Reb Yehuda says, look, and therefore he says you cannot chop up carobs for a large or small animal, because we're going to say chopping up carob is just improving it, right? So, and that you're not allowed to do because it's a soft one. To which Reb Yehuda responded, if you're telling me that you're allowed to create food, you just can't fix food, I should be able to chop up a carob, even though it's soft, for a young for a behemoth daka, because a behemoth daka can't chew it very well. So then it makes sense. Tanakhama says you can make food, you can't improve it. Rabbi Yehuda says cutting up a carob for a behemoth daka is making food, it's not improving it, and therefore you can do it. So the conversation makes sense. But it continues the Gemara, Ela Iamri, but if you're going to tell me like Rav Huna, Tanakhama Savar Shavi Ochle Lo Mashvinon, Mitrach Bochlen Mitarchinon, that you're not allowed to create new food, you can only improve food. So then, Rabbi Yehuda, one second, let's just see the Gersi here. Rabbi Yehuda matir, b'charuvin ledaka. So then, the Gemara says, this makes no sense. So then, what is Rabbi Yehuda saying that you can chop it up for a small animal? Kosha kein legasa. So, the Gemara is saying as follows. If you understand, like Rav Huna, the Mishnah, if the conversation doesn't make any sense. Because Rav Huna is the one who says, You can make food. Rav Huna is the one who says that you can improve food. You can't make food, right? So fine. So if that's what the Tanakhama is saying, you can improve food, but you can't make it. To which Rabbi Yehuda comes and says, well, you can cut up things for a small animal, because that's just improving food, right? So then, what is he saying? In other words, because then the Gemara is saying, why are you talking about a daka? If you could do it for a daka, if you could slice up food for a daka because it's just improving it, then for a gasa, for a bigger behemoth, for sure all you're doing is improving it and not making it into brand new food. So ask the Gemara, the conversation makes no sense, that if Rabbi Yehuda was, in other words, if the Tanakhama was saying you can improve food, but you cannot cut up a carob, to which Rabbi Yehuda would come and say, no, even a carob you could cut up for a gasa and of course a daka. But why would he say just a daka? Because if you could do it for a daka and you say that's only improving food, it's not making it, then for sure for a gasa you're only improving it and not making it. So the Gemara is saying, according to Rav Huna, the conversation between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda makes no sense. Rabbi Yehuda's answer should be that you could cut it up both for a daka and gasa, because if you could do it for a daka, for sure for a gasa. So why does he only say a daka? So the Gemara says, misare daka, daka mamish. When it says daka, the Rabbi Yehuda says you could cut it up for daka. Do you think that means like a sheep or a goat, like a small animal? My daka? What does daka mean? Gasa. We're living in an upside down world. Daka means gasa. So the Gemara says, wait a second. Why would you, see the Gersa here? My daka gasa, via my karile daka. So then you still have to explain why is it calling it a daka if it means a gasa? So Gemara says the daika ba'ukhla, because it's medayik, it's very careful in how it chews. So when Rabbi Yehuda says you could dice up the carob for a daka, he means for a gasa who chews its food very well, and therefore you could do it both for a daka and a gasa. So that answers the question. But the Gemara says, well, wait a second. Aside from the fact that it's very hard to imagine that daka means gasa, but ask the Gemara. So the Gemara says, Hamidiktani Resha ben daka ben gasa mechlad Rabbi Yehuda daka daka mamish. But he says, well, wait a second. The Resha before Rabbi Yehuda said you cannot cut up a carob for a daka or a gasa. So clearly, in that sense, it was using the word daka in contradistinction to a gasa. So you can't tell me that one line later Rabbi Yehuda is using daka to mean a gasa. Because if the Tanakhama referred to a daka, talking about a daka, you can't then come and say a statement where you mean daka means a gasa without saying what's going on here. So the Gemara says, Kasha, that's a good Kasha, but as we've learned many times with Rashbam and Bava Basra, we've talked about it a number of times, Kasha is different than Tiyufta. Tiyufta means it's uprooted. Kasha means it's a problem, but there's some kind of solution to it. But in any event, this was a Kasha on Rav Huna. Rav Huna gave an answer that Daka means Gasa, and the Gemara says, well, wait a second, that doesn't fit. So the whole thing is left off of Kasha, but it's not it doesn't uproot Rav Huna's opinion. So now, again, we're arguing about Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda. Rav Huna is the one who says you can fix food, but you can't make food. Rav Yehuda is the one who says you can make food, you can't fix food. We're now going to ask Akasha on Rav Yehuda. Says the Gemara, Tashma, bottom of Kufnun Hayamud Aleph, Mechatzkin, now we go to Kufnun Hayamud Beis, Mechatzkin Sadulun Lefnei Behema, that's an available Lefnei Akloven. That we're allowed to cut up a dulu in our gourds. You can cut up a gourd in front of a behema, and you can cut up a nevela in front of a dog. And what's the point here? Rashi says the point is, even though these are generally things that are for human consumption, that if you wanted to feed it to your animal, well, at least the deluin are human consumption, then if you want to feed it to your animal, you're entitled to do that, and it's not muksa as something that's designated specifically for humans. Okay, so you can cut up a gourd in front of your behema. So it says the Gemara, my lab, deluyin dunyum dumyo dunavela. So it seems, as we said before, similar logic, that a deluyin, a gourd, could be soft or hard. Presumably it's soft, just like a nevela. Cause ma nevela, the rakicha, just like, the meat, of a nevela, meat is generally soft, meat is soft, af deluyin the rakicha. So it must be talking about soft gourds that you're able to cut up. So alma, what do you see? Tarchinon buuchla. That you can improve ukhla, because if you're dealing with a soft gourd, you could eat it that way, or you could slice it up and make it better. But all you're doing is you're improving the food. You're not making it into food. Utiyufta Rabbi Yehuda, because this is a big problem for Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda is the one who says you can only make food. That they allowed you to do, but to improve food, you're not allowed to do. But if you're allowed to cut up a soft gourd that's otherwise edible, that's just improving food, and so we should, it seems like a kasha Rabbi Yehuda. So I'm Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda would tell you similar structure to the answer before. Lo, nevela dumya deduluyin. You were trying to learn that the gourds are soft just like meat. I'm gonna tell you no, the meat is hard just like a gourd. Ma deluyin da shune, af nevela da shune, just like Rashi says, ashune just means kashin, hard. That just like gourds are hard, so too the nevela is hard. So how is this an answer? So he's saying, when the Braisa tells you you could cut up nevela or you could cut up gourds, it's talking about gourds or nevela that are otherwise unedible. So what you're doing is you're making food, you're not improving food. But now you're going to have to address the question, what does that mean to have a hard nevela? Meat is soft. So it says the Gemara, v'hechi mishkachas al b'basar, v'hechi mishkachas la, how do you find a hard nevela? Where is there such a thing? The Gemara says, b'basar pili. If you're feeding your dog elephant meat. So an elephant is, Michael, this is good for your limerick. That, the elephant meat is hard. And therefore, it's creating food. When you cut it up for your animal, you're creating food. You're not improving food. Inami biguryasa zutri. Alternatively, it's not a problem with the meat, but it's a problem with the eater. We had the same thing before when we said with the young donkeys. So we're saying, if you're feeding it to your behemoth, who's very small, a baby behemoth. So even regular nevela is too hard for it to eat. So therefore, it's telling you you could cut it up. So the deluin and the meat that we're talking about are hard deluin or hard meat, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda has no problem, because he says by cutting it up, you're making it into food. Making it into food is something that I said is permitted. It's only improving food that you can't do. Okay, one more. Tashma, come in here. The Tani Ruchanan min Ardoi. Ruchanan min Ardoi said as follows, the Braisa, Mifarchinon teven vaspasto umarvin. That you can to crumble up tevin is straw, aspasta is the same as the shachas. Rashi on Amud Aleph said Esav shel tvua v'hi aspasta, the shachas. So we talked about that as the junky straw. So you could mix the junky straw with better straw umarvin and mix them together. So you can crumble them and mix them together. So alma tachinam beuchla. So he says, what do we see? You have straw and shachas, both of which can be eaten without being crumbled, and yet you see that you can crumble it. So it must be that you can improve food and not just make food. So this is a kasha on Rabbi Yehuda. So Gemara says, teven betivna sarya, aspasta beile zutre. He says, no, this is actually a case where, it's not a case where you're improving the food, you're making it edible. Why? Because the straw we're talking about is straw that's a little bit spoiled. So therefore, you have to mix it with something else, like aspasta, which is shachas, to make it edible for the animal. And so that explains why you're able to mix it. And why are you able to crumble it? We're saying because we're feeding it to these young donkeys who need their food crumbled. And once you're crumbling the aspasta, the shachas, so then you also have to crumble the spoiled straw. Rashi points out it's not totally spoiled, because if it was totally spoiled, it would be used for tina, which is like for mixing the clay or construction purposes, and that would be muksa. But anyway, it's partially spoiled straw with other straw, and you're feeding it to young donkeys. Therefore, because you're feeding it to young donkeys, you have to crumble it up well, and because you're trying to hide the spoiled straw in the non-spoiled straw, you have to make it look all alike. So therefore, you crumble up and mix them, and now it becomes a mixture that is edible to animals and in the appropriate consistency for them to be able to eat it. Okay, says the Mishnah, first wide line on Kuf Nun Hey Amud Beis. Ein ovsin es hagomel v'lo darsin. Alright, so basically what this mission is going to be dealing with is when you feed an animal, so when they were going on travel, they would try to stuff as much food as possible in the animal. So there's a certain amount of that stuffing that's permissible and a certain amount that's not. And so that's the preface to this Mishnah, because we're going to say some words and then we're going to see in the Gemara what they mean. And also there's an underlying assumption here that there's different words that are used for, depending on the animal, there are different words that use, but they mean the same thing. So if one kind of stuffing is permissible with a cow, it's going to be permissible with a chicken, and vice versa. It's just that the reality is that they have different words to use for those same things. So with that, let's read the Mishnah. So ain ovsin es hagamo, you don't stuff a camel, lo darsin, a different form of stuffing. We'll talk about what it means. Avo malitin, but you are able to do some form of stuffing them. So there's two forms of stuffing you can't do. One form of stuffing you can do. Ve'im ma'amrin es hagalin, that you don't stuff the calf, the eagle, avo malitin, but you can do lo'ata, umahalkitin latarnagolin. When we're talking about birds, you could do mahaltikin to be malakate, or somehow, again, whatever these words mean. We'll see in a minute what they mean. Vinothan mayin lamorsin, and you can pour another thing when you're feeding your animal. Now we're not talking about stuffing your animal, but you can pour water into morsin. Morsin is bran. Avalo govlin, but you can't mix it together. All right, we'll talk about what that means. Vinothan mayin lefnei devorim lefnei yonim shebeshovach. You cannot put water in front of bees or in front of yonim, doves that are in a shovach, a dove coat, a birdhouse. That you can put water in front of a goose or a tarnagol, is a chicken or a rooster, and in front of yoni hardesos, which Rashi says is a certain kind of that was the name of the place. These are animals that you feed in your house. So then, for those animals that are domesticated animals, you can put water in front of them, but you cannot put water in front of bees or these birds that are off on their own in the birdhouse. Okay, so we're going to analyze this Mishnah as we go through the Gemara. My ein obsin, what does it mean that you're not ovis an animal? I'm Rabbi Yehuda, ein obsin lo ovis besoch me'al. We don't create, an avos is like the trough that an animal eats from. So he said, we don't make a trough inside the animal, in its stomach. That's what it means. That we don't do. So the Gemara asked, Miyaka kia gavna? Well, what does that mean? How could you put so much food in an animal that it's like as if you put a trough inside the animal? The Gemara says, in, Ukhudama Rav Yirmiyah Midifti, Rav Yirmiyah Midifti said, Lididi chazili ahutaya, I saw this certain Arab, the achle kura vatina kura, that he fed his donkey, his camel, an entire core of straw or whatever it is that camels eat, and then he put another core on his back. So you see that there's such a thing. You could stuff your animal pretty full. So it's ein ovsin. You don't stuff it full like you're making a trough in the stomach of the animal. Okay, so that was the beginning of our mission. Ein ovsin is a gamol. And then we said, but you can be maletit. And then we said, the ein mamirin. We don't do, we aren't mamirin. Ezuhi hamra. What is hamra? Vezuhi halata. What is halata? So basically, we said halata you can do, but hamra you cannot do. So I'm Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says as follows: hamra lamakam sheni yichol lahachzer, halata lamakam sheni yichol lahachzer. So he says, here's the distinction. Basically, when you're stuffing an animal, there's one kind of stuffing that's permissible and one kind of stuffing that's not permissible. So he says, which one is permissible is where you stuff it down the animal's throat, but if the animal wanted, it could still spit it back up, meaning it has not passed the point at which it has its final swallowing. And if you stuff it past the point where the animal can no longer regurgitate it or spit it out, then that's what you're not allowed to do. So basically, you could stuff your animal as long as your animal could reverse it. But if you stuff it so far down the animal's throat that the animal can't do anything about it, that's going to be a problem for Shabbos. Rav Chista says, "Idi v'idi l'makom shein yichol l'hachzer." So he says, no. Both things, the one that says mutter and the one that says usser, are talking about things where you push it past the point the animal can't spit it out if it wants. V'hamra b'chli halata b'yad. So when one is mutter and one is usser, one is saying, they're both saying you can stuff it past the point of no return. But one says, the one that's usser is to do it with a keli, Rashi says like a tarvid, like a spoon, but the one that's mutter is if you do it with your hand. So if you take food and shove it down the throat of the animal, even past the point of no return, that's okay. You put it in your hand. But if you were to take a spoon or some other kind of keli, you would not be able to do it. Okay. So ask the Gemara. If that's, so, Masir Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef asked the question. Mahalkatin latarnagolin. So there's a brisa that says you could do mahaltakin to a bird. V'ein tzarech lomer shem malkitin. You could do a halkta, and I don't know what the right verbs are, but mahalkatin is okay, and malkitin is okay. V'ein malkitin leyone shovach leyone aliyah. And you don't do even malkitin for a the birds in the birdhouse or the attic in the aliyah. Vein tzarich lomer shem mahalkitin. So if you can't be malakit them, then you surely can't be mahalkitin. Okay. So we say there are two kinds of stuffing by birds you cannot do to the birds that are in. That are off on their own, but you could do it for a tarnagol, both kinds of stuffing. So continues the Gemara, my mahalkitin and my malkitin, what are these two kinds of stuffing? Ilema, so now we're going to try and figure out, what is it? One is more than the other. So we're going to say as follows. And so you're going to say that mahal ketin, which you're allowed to do with a tarnagol, is talking about sticking it in with your hands. Malkitin the shadile kamayu. So if the more invasive one is only sticking your hand down the animal's throat and feeding it, then the less invasive one has to be just putting it in front of them. So he says, okay, so therefore, the beginning of the braisa, which tells you that by a tarnagol, you could do two kinds of stuffing. So one is with your hand, and one is putting it in front. Just putting it in front of the animal, where you're not sticking it in at all. But says the Gemara, mechlal the yoni shavuch yonah aliyah, mishtik hamayah nami lo. So the Gemara says, but then I have a problem, because then the next thing the braisa said was, when it comes to the yoni shavuch and yoni aliyah, which are the birds in the birdhouse, you can't do either of these things. So he says, wait, if the two things, one is stuffing it with your hand, and one is just sticking the food in front of them, why can't you stick food in front of a Yone Shovach or Yone Aliyah? Big deal, you're not doing anything, it's easy. So why would the Brisa say not to do that? So El Olav, so what must be the case? The Mahal Ketin, L'makom Sheni Yichol Lahachzir, that it must mean that the two things that are mutter by a tarnagol must be the more significant one is to stick it beyond the point of no return, and then malkitin lemakom sheichol lahachzir, and then the other one you're allowed to do is to stick it in its throat, but not all the way past the point of no return. So now it's better, because we're saying by a tarnagol there's two things you could do. You could shove it down its throat past the point of no return, and for sure you could stick it down its throat before the point of no return. And then the Yone Shovach and the Yone Aliyah, you can't do either of those things, but at least you could put the food in front of them. So that tells you, Mechlal Dehamra Bekeli. So therefore, if we see, this goes back to what I said before, that we assume all animals are the same. So if we see Mahalktakin is sticking it down past the point of no return with your hand, right? So then hamra must be because it says ve'ema mirines hagolin avo malitin. So he says that halata must be if halata, which is the same as mahalketin, so if halata is okay, so a halata is something we say in the Mishnah is mutter. Avol malitin, you could do halata. So halata, if it's mutter, must be the same as mahalketin by a bird. So one is by an animal, one is by a bird. So if you see by an animal that halata is the same as mahalketin, so therefore, and we've established that the mahalketin by the bird has to mean sticking it beyond the point of no return, right? So then, hamra'a, which is more serious than that which is permitted. So halata is permitted, hamra'a is not permitted. So if halata has to be equal to mahalketin, and that already covers sticking it beyond the point of no return, then hamra'a, which says you cannot do it, has to be talking about doing it with a keli. V'tiyufta de Rabbi Yehuda, this is a kasha on Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda was the one who said, because Rabbi Chista was the one who said who distinguished between using a keli and not. Rabbi Yehuda was the one who tried to say that for an animal, a regular animal, you can stick it in but not past the point of no return. But now that we say that we saw from a bird, mahalketin is the same halata, and halata includes putting it past the point of no return, then hamra has to be that you cannot do it with a keli, and that was the opinion of Rav Chista, not the opinion of Rav Yehuda. So it seems from the braisa by the birds, it's a kasha on Rav Yehuda. So I'm like Rav Yehuda would tell you, la'olam mahalketin, what is it that you're allowed to do with a bird? The safile biyadayim, that you're sticking it down its throat. Malkitin, that which you can do malkitin, the shadi le kamayu, that you're sticking in front of them. So he says, no, I'm going to go back to the way you initially understood it. There's two things that are mutter by a bird. What are those two things? One is sticking it down with your hand, but not past the point of no return. And one is sticking it, just spreading it out in front of the behemoths. So why didn't we like that before? Because we had a kasha. Udika kasha loch, that which was a kasha to you, yone shavach v'yone aliyah, lemishta kamayu nami lo. So he says, but we had a problem because we said, well, if that's true, if the two things that are mutter by a tarnagol are sticking it down the throat but not pointing to pass on no return and spreading it out in front of them, if those are the mutter things, but it says yoni shavach, yoni aliyah, you can't do either of those, why wouldn't you be able to put out food in front of yoni shavach and yoni aliyah? You're not doing any real work. So that's why we abandoned this explanation before. But Rabbi Yehuda says, no, that's a valid explanation. So he says, and according to that question, I'll tell you the difference. I'll tell you why, in fact, you cannot, the Gemara's assumption was, of course you could spread food out in front of Yoni Shovach and Yoni Aliyah, because it's no big deal. You're not doing much. So Gemara says, I'll tell you, you cannot do that. Hani mizonoson alecho, v'hani ein mizonoson alecho. That the distinction, the reason why a tarnagol, one of the permitted forms of feeding is sticking in front of him, but that's not an acceptable form of feeding for Yoni Shovach and Yoni Aliyah, is because your tarnagol, your rooster, your turk, or your chicken is reliant on you to feed it. So therefore, you're allowed to put food in front of it. But an animal that can go get its own food in the wild, like the birds that are in the birdhouse, you're not allowed to feed it, and therefore you can't even put out the food in front of it. So Rabbi Yehuda is able to answer, you assumed that automatically, of course you could put food in front of a Yoni Shovach and Yoni Aliyah. The answer is you can't. Only in front of a Tarnagolas, in front of a bird that's reliant on you for food. Kedisayan, like we learned in the Braisa, Nosu Mizonos Lofnei Akelev, Nosu Mizonos Lofnei Chazir. You could put food in front of a dog, but you cannot put it in front of a Chazir. What's the difference? Why can, if you could feed a dog on Shabbos, why can't you feed a pig? So he says, because a dog you could have in your house where it's reliant on you to feed it, so therefore you're allowed to feed it on Shabbos. But a pig, as Rashi points out, that there was a curse on anyone who raised pigs. Jews don't raise pigs. And therefore, there would never be a scenario where you're obligated to feed a pig because you don't raise pigs. So therefore, that's the distinction. So you see a support for this notion that if an animal like a Yoni Shovach or Yoni Aliyah is not reliant on you for food, you're not allowed to do anything. You're not allowed to put food out for it. Amar Ravashi. Ravashi says, Masnisa Nami Deka. Even from our Mishnah, you can learn, which Rashi says, the Afilu Shadi Kamayu Nami Lo, that you can't even put food out in front of an animal that's not reliant on you for food. Where do we see that? Because we said in our Mishnah, that you cannot put water out in front of bees or in front of the doves that are in the birdhouse. But you can put it in front of a goose or a chicken or this other type of domesticated yonah. So my time, oh, what's the reason? Lav mishum, the honey mizonos and alecha, the honey aim mizonos and alecha. So that seems to be a similar point, because the animals that are in your house, you can give them water, but then the bees can go get water themselves. So the Gemara says, wait a second, don't go, you know, they're not necessarily saying you're wrong that there's a distinction. Well, they're saying it's not so simple, because maybe our Mishnah does not stand for that proposition. Ulatimek, according to you, that the distinction is that the bees and Yoni Shovach are not reliant on you, but the tarnagol and the goose, those are Mayir Yimai. So then why did the Mishnah talk about putting water? Afilu Chita Vesari Namilo. So it's not just water you can't put in front of a bee or a Yoni Shovach. You shouldn't be able to put food either. So why say water? The implication is from the Mishnah that maybe water you cannot put in front of them, but food you could put in front of them. Elashani Maya the Shchichi Kabagma, because water you can find anywhere. The Agam is like a marsh or a water source. So the idea would be, in fact, maybe our Mishnah is saying the opposite. Our Mishnah, which says you cannot put water in front of a bee or in front of Yoni Shovach, is because water they can get anywhere, but food, you might be able to put in front of them. In which case, that loses this distinction that we're trying to establish, that food, animals that are reliant on you for food, that those you can feed, but not the ones who aren't. And maybe our Mishnah does not stand for that proposition. But in any event, that's just a question whether you could prove it for our Mishnah. Continues the Gemara. Darish Rav Yona Apischa de Benesia. Rav Yona darshined on the doorway to the Benesia. My dechsiv, what's this that's written? That, this is a pasuk in Mishle, it says, Yadeya Tzadik Din Dalim, that the Tzadik knows the din, the judgment of the poor, or the plight of the poor. So we're gonna darshan that pasuk, Yadeya Kadosh Baruch Hu Bekelev, Shemizanoisam Muatin, that the Rabban Shalom knows that people don't like to feed dogs, and it doesn't have that much food. Lefikach, Shoha Achilasa B'mei of Gimel Yamin. Therefore, the Rabbanu Shalom did something nice to a dog to make it that the dog, what food it gets, it takes a few days to process it, and therefore the dog is not left hungry. So this is the Rabbanu Shalom. The Pasuk is telling you that the Rabbanu Shalom understands unfortunate creatures and therefore responded in their nature to make the gestation period much longer, and therefore he could survive on less food for longer. Kidnisnan, where do we see this concept that a dog has a long digestive period? So because we learned in a mission as follows, Kama tisha sechilasu b'meyav, v'heitamei b'kelev, gimol yamim me'esla es, v'ofas v'dagim k'desha tipa la'or v'tisarif. So what's this talking about? This is talking about as follows, that if we know that a dead human body is an avi avos atuma, if an animal were to eat a human corpse, the as Rashi points out, at that point we would be dealing with tuma blua bebalechayim, that when tuma is absorbed into a living creature, it no longer emits tuma. So now the corpse meat will not, this animal, if a dog eats the corpse meat and walks into a house, then the house is not tame with tumas ol, because even though there's a dead body in it, but since it's in the body of the dog, that doesn't the tuma doesn't transmit. But what happens if an animal eats a dead person, walks into a house, and the animal itself drops dead? So at that point, if the human body, the dead person, is still in existence, so then it will in fact be metame with oel, or in any other way that corpse meat is metame. So we say as follows. So what happens? How long after the dog ate the meat do we assume that it's absorbed and eaten up, and then therefore you don't have to worry about it being metame if the animal dies? So the Gemara says, "Kama tisha achilasu b'meyav v'hei tamei." So how long can an animal have meat in it and it can still be tamei? We say, "Bekelev gimel yam me'es la'es." It's 72 hours, 3 days to from me'es la'es, from one time to another. It's 72 hours. Ubaopas of a dagin, but with birds and with fish, kadesh tipolar v'tisarif. As long as it takes for you to drop meat in a fire, and by the time it will get burnt up in a fire, that's also how quickly it gets digested by an animal. So basically what we're seeing is that a dog takes 3 days to digest things that other animals digest very quickly. So this is part of the notion that the Rabbanu Shalom was kind to the dogs. Rav Hamnuna says, Shmami na orichar la mishta umtsa lekalba. So you see from this that if you want to mimic the actions of the Rabbanu Shalom, it's appropriate, it's acceptable to give some food to a dog, to give meat to a dog, just like they're, you know, because you see the Rabbanu Shalom, you know, was concerned about the eating of a dog. Now the Mefarshim spend a lot of time discussing whether there's any mitzvah here. It seems it's not really a mitzvah, although they say maybe all animals to be nice because you're merachim al abrios is a form of a mitzvah. There's a lot of discussion about this in the poskim, but we're not going to get into it now. So in any event, so we say that it's acceptable, it's appropriate to feed meat to an animal. V'kama, how much food should you give a dog? Rav Mari, mashach udne v'chutra abasre. Give him the size of his ear, meaning a small piece of meat, and then hit him with a stick. What's the idea here? So we're saying, if you're going to start feeding a dog and you're not going to hit him, he's going to chase after you all the time. Rashi says it's going to end up costing you a lot of money because you're going to be stuck feeding this dog. So what should you do if you want to be nice to a dog? Feed the dog and then hit the dog. So then the dog's like, I don't like this guy, and they'll stay away from you. So you're not stuck with this dog forever. So hani mili b'dabro. And this is only true with a wild dog. Avo b'masa. That's like in the desert or in the wilderness, but in the city, low, that you shouldn't feed a dog the asal misrach, because he's gonna end up stuck to you, and that's when Rashi says you'll lose money. Okay, Amar Papa says less the anya mikalba, the less the atir mikhazira. There's no animal or no one that's poorer than a dog, and no one that's richer than a pig amongst the animals. Rashi explains, because a pig can eat anything, shekol maicha roi lo that all food is appropriate for a pig. He doesn't care. Motzi lechol, he can always find what to eat. Va'af machilin lo harbe, and also people feed pigs a lot. They fatten up pigs. So pigs are rich. They're easy to get food. Dogs, not so easy. Okay. Tanya kavasi de Rabbi Yehuda. We learned a brisa like Rabbi Yehuda. So if you remember, Rabbi Yehuda was the one. So he said, Rabbi Yehuda was the one who said that that it's usher to put it past the point of no return, whether with a hand or with a keli. That was as distinct from Rechista. So we're saying we have a brisa that holds like Rabbi Yehuda because we said ezu hi hamra of ezu hi halata, which is hamra, which is not permitted, versus halata, which is permitted. Hamra marbitza upoke says pia umachila karshinum mayim bevasachas. So he says hamra is marbitza. We force it to kneel down. Upoke says pia. We stick something. Rashi says in his mouth to hold open his mouth, and then we feed him karshinim, which is a kind of a bean. And water, bevasachas, we pour it down together. So basically, we force feed the animal in significant fashion. Halata, but halata is what? The machila mu'umad, we feed him while he's standing. Umashke mu'umad, we give him to drink while he's standing. Venosun karshinim b'fnei atzmon, mayim b'fnei atzmon, and we give the food and the water separately. So what do you see? So Rashi says that you feed him standing. No son talk piva cold man shenim arbitza. As long as the animal is not kneeling down and propped open its mouth, ain't a yochel litcho kol kach. In other words, the permissible food is to feed an animal while it's standing. When an animal's standing, you can't get your hand that far down. The yochel achzira and what you can feed an animal while the animal's standing is something that the animal should always be able to expel. So that supports Rabbi Yehuda's notion that you can force feed an animal, but only to the point that the animal can expel it, not beyond that point. So that's a support to Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, let's just do very quickly the next thing. Mahaltikin l'tarnagolin, that we can be mahaltik the tarnagolim. Actually, that's the quote, but what we're more dealing with was the Mishnah said that you can pour water into the morsin, into the bran. So I'm Rabbiya, I'm Risa Kameh Demar. I said it in front of Mar Masnisin Mani, who's the Mishnah? Vamar Li, he said to me, Rabbi Yossi Bar Yehudahi, that it's, our Mishnah is like Rabbi Yossi Bar Yehuda. The Sanya, because we learned in a Braisa. Echad Nosin is a Kemach. We dealt with this earlier in Shabbos. If one, we had this, way in the beginning on Daf Yud Ches, that, Echad Nosin is a Kemach, Echad Nosin Tocho Mayim, that if one person put in flour, and the other person just poured in water, or vice versa, Ha'achron Chayev, the last one is Chayev for kneading. Divrei Rebbe, these are the words of Rebbe, because I don't have to actually take my hands and knead it. If I have flour and I pour in water, or there's water there and I pour in flour, the one who did the second action is essentially performing an act of kneading. Rabbi Yossi says, Ene Chayev Achi Gavel, that he's not chayev until he actually mixes it together. So, therefore, you see that our Mishnah, which says you can pour water into bran, and we're not worried that you're doing a form of kneading, is Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, because according to Rabbi, as soon as you pour water into flour, or flour into water, that's considered kneading. So our Mishnah is like Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. So Gemara says, wait a second, maybe not. Dilma akan lokam Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda asam elokemach debar gibohu. Maybe it's only there that Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda said it's not kneel and kneading to pour water into flour or flour into water. Why? Because flour and water are capable of being kneaded. Avo morsin de lav bar gibelhu, but bran, which doesn't really mix and become a mixed dough or anything. Maybe afilu Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda moda. Maybe even Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda would say that when it's something that is capable of being mixed and becoming dough, you have to mix it. But if it's something that's not going to become dough anyway, like bran and water, maybe you're chayev as soon as you pour it in. So how do you know that our Mishnah is Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda? Maybe Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda would say you can't even do what our Mishnah allows. The Gemara says, lo sagadaita, you shouldn't think that. That's not true. Disanya behedya, because we learned a very clear brisa, which says, ein nosim mayim lemorsin, we don't put water into bran, divrei Rebbe, these are the words of Rebbe, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, amar nosim mayim lemorsin, we do in fact put, water into bran. What's the point? That Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda says, doesn't matter whether it's flour or it's bran, you're not chayav for just pouring water into flour, or flour into water, or bran into water, or water into bran. So, Tana Rabbanan, Ein Govlin as a Kali. Kali is, as Rashi explains, we have it many times, have it in Gemara and Brachas, they talk about they throw Kali, which were like roasted kernels of wheat, which become very sweet. So here we're talking about Kali, you made flour out of those roasted kernels. So the nature of this is that when you have these roasted kernels and you make flour, it doesn't create a dough. It's like Morsin. So it says, Ein Govlin as a Kali, you cannot be megabble them to like really like try to knead them actively. The Yeshomrim Govlin. There are those who say you can in fact knead it. Man Yeshomrim, who's the one who says you can knead it, you can knead these this kind of flour that doesn't really take with water and actively knead it. Amram Chizr, Chizr says Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, it's Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, because according to the Chachamim, well, we're going to see in a second, Vahani Mili Yehuda Mishani, as long as he does it with a Shinoi. So who is this? This cannot be, as Rashi points out, it cannot be the Chachamim, because it cannot be Rebbe, because Rebbe, there's no Shinoi you could do with pouring the water, and Rebbe's of the opinion that as soon as you pour water into a flour, or even if it's bran, that doesn't mix well, that you're chayav then. So it can't be Rebbe. It must be Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda. So what it's saying is as follows. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that mixing together things that don't mix, midaraisa, it's never a problem. So therefore, theoretically, you should be able to mix together bran and, you could actively mix together bran and water, or you could actively mix together this kali flour with water, and you would not be over on the issa daraisa. But we see that Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda said in our Mishnah, you mix bran, but don't be megabble it, but actually that's a question the Mefarshim deal with, why he says that. But what you see is that when there's an opinion that you can actually be megabble, that you can actually mix together this cauliflower with water, as long as you do a shinoi, it must be Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, because it cannot be Rebbe. And says the Gemara, Hechi Mishani, what kind of shinoi does he do? Am Rav Chista al yad al yad. He does a little bit at a time. So normally, the ordinary way you would mix flour of any sort is you make a big batch. So it's saying, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, if it's not real flour that's going to mix and create a dough, you could actually actively mix it and you're not going to be chayev. You could do that as long as you do it with a shinoi. What would that shinoi be? To do a little bit at a time. Okay. Shavuot Tov. Good
luck. Thanks so much.
Thank you.